Yeah, that's what they, well, they
died to see difference, really.
They put into it here, and it had to come back 3 hours later, and by then it goes through the system. All right, do you want to close the RF, Steve? We'll start.
See,
ready
I can't
room.
Take an MRI anymore.
Why not?
Pacemaker.
Ah. By the way, I saw George. I met him afterwards. I went to the Coupe. I met George. Seems to be doing better, and he was in a fighting mood because it seems this woman who was converted by Rav Kanievsky is based in they don't want to accept the conversion, so he was in a fighting mood, to put it mildly. Okay, anyway, we're ready to begin today. It's March 23rd, 2014, and I already was told off for teaching today because it seems that, what time? At 6 o'clock in three quarters of an hour. The Chag HaSmicha begins in New York, and it can be watched all over the world, although if it goes onto the website, it remains there permanently. Why do we have to be Mavatel Torah? But considering how many people are listening across the world, and considering the erudite gentlemen who are now entering the classroom, I have to continue. Now, I also want to tell you in advance that I'm hitting upon a point very shortly, and I trust in 15 minutes, that goes way beyond the narrow confines of Erev and takes us into the basic attempt to understand what the Psak Halacha is all about. Now, just to reiterate, Rav Menashe Klein, who I have to say I've come to admire, love, respect, and understand, I've gone through all 18 volumes of his Tshuvat, and he was a unique individual. And he came out against Reb Moshe and came out, and we'll see many, many reasons why you can build an Erev. It's not a Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita, not Manhattan, not Brooklyn, etc. Part of the modern Torah world, we all suffer from it or are part of it, is, of course, this whole concept of Das Torah. This concept of Das Torah, in other words, Gedolei Yisrael can't be wrong. You saw it at the demonstration against the Israeli army, against the draft, and I don't have to comment on it. I got many calls from my own Talmidim how to relate to it. And I answered very simply. I said, I don't understand you. And if you asked the Satmar Rebbe in 1935 whether you should go on Aliyah or not, and the Rebbe answered what he answered, you understand what happened. So there's certain things that are pulsating within the Torah world, within the Jewish world. Over 6 million Jews live here. The Haredim, thank God, are very successful with their children, and they're going to be the majority of the country, and they're going to have to take over the army, they're going to have to take over the economy. And I don't know in my lifetime, but certainly in your lifetime, the younger students here, you will, as you rob the words from me, Chaim. Herbie robbed the words. There will be a, Ben-Gurion used to say, I'm looking forward to the day that the Ramatkal will be a Taimani. I don't know if the Ramatkal was ever a Taimani, but he was a Moroccan, he was an Iraqi, etc., etc. And there's no doubt that there will be a time when the chief of staff will be a Haredi Jew in the full sense of the word. So there's a process at work, but when you take the concept of Das Torah, that these rabbis can't be wrong, and anyone who differs with them is an Amoritz, an Apikoris, an Oikedat, and all that goes with it, and all the Pasquales, and all the maledictions, and all the cursing. It's a very sad story. Now, Reb Menashe Klein got caught up with that in the United States. Because in 1952, when he argued with Reb Moshe on whether you can wear a plastic covering on your hat on Shabbos, Reb Moshe was Reb Moshe, and Reb Menashe was really Menashe HaKatan, underlined the word HaKatan. By the early 70s, Reb Moshe was the Gadol Hadar, Das Torah, how can you differ with him? And evidently, at an Agudat HaRabbanim convention, Reb Menashe Klein was heartily condemned for daring to differ with Reb Moshe. And in response to that condemnation, he writes to the chairman of the executive committee, I believe was his title, Reb Simcha Elberg, who I happen to know personally, and he writes to Reb Simcha, How can you condemn me? I have a right to differ with Reb Meisher. Reb Meisher quotes the tshuva on the hat. Reb Meisher himself said I had the right to differ. Now he went into the tshuva in great detail. Let me go a step further and pick up on new material. By this time, Lakewood is Lakewood. Now, it just so happens in the Monday class, I've been lecturing on Lakewood on the Baron Cutler. I still have another lecture to go tomorrow. Very interesting material tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. And Lakewood, as you all know, is by the 1970s a fountainhead of Torah, fountainhead of influence. Lakewood already is a Shem Dova. Lakewood, the swing to the right in America, as they popularly call it, is in full motion by the 1970s. And it seems Talmidim in Lakewood wrote to Rav Menashe Klein, how can you dare differ with Rav Moshe Feinstein? Now, in Sharei Halacha, Choveret, the Chelik Bet, it's in Choveret Yud Gimel, in a kuntris called Om Ani Choma, published in 1981. Reb Menashe Klein takes on the fellows from Lakewood. And it's an interesting Malat Kvod Yiditi, who he's writing to, someone named Joseph Gelb, I don't know exactly who that is. Necher Hagon HaChosid, he's somebody that Rav Menashe Klein knows. This is his grandson, and Lakewood, New Jersey. And here Rav Menashe Klein, again, he's caught in the quagmire. This is a world he's part of. He doesn't want to condemn the world. This is Lakewood. Lakewood is on the map. Lakewood knows how to learn. Lakewood has branches now all over the United States. Lakewood is a Shem Dava, and Rav Menashe Klein is being criticized very strongly by these young men in Lakewood. So, Rav Menashe hears Melamed Zchut, and this takes us back to a story I told you, I don't know if I told you this year, last year, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but it's a story I have often repeated. We're living at a time today where more people are learning Torah than ever before. I don't have to tell you what it means to have a Siyum HaShas. What were there, 90,000 people gathered in a football stadium, and they even could put in much more than you put in at a football game because you didn't need the arena for the players to run back and forth, so that you really had people sitting not only in the bleachers, the grandstands, whatever they call it, the box seats, but on the field as well. Well, 90,000 people learning Daf Yomi, wherever you go, people learning Daf Yomi, and that's 90,000 only on the east coast of the United States. Israel, the west coast, Baruch Hashem, more people are learning Torah than ever before. But on the other hand, the knowledge of Torah, of Lamdanim, of Hakim, less than ever. Sometimes I speak with people who are supposedly learning Daf Yomi, and there's no one to talk to. You're on a different level altogether. You're from a different world. I'm from the world that sat before the Rav, sat before Rav Aaron Cutler. I'm from the world of Shanghai. It's a different level altogether. The breitkeit, the knowledge, the horizon, the ma'of, the modern Hebrew word they use, the ma'of, is totally lacking. So Reb Menashe Klein, when you begin his tshuva, he says right away that he understands that the boys in Lakewood la'amod al ha'emet mean well and want to be truthful and want to arrive at the truth, but they lack the knowledge. They don't understand the way Psak Halacha works. And he says, therefore, I attribute their criticisms to their lack of knowledge. And I'm going to deal with it, he says. I'm going to answer you. I'm going to write to you. I'm going to write with the premise that you are honest, you are sincere, you are truth seekers, and I want to help you gain knowledge. And then he goes in to the letter that he had written to Rav Elberg, and you see him struggling here. And to read these words, if you don't understand the sociological background of what was happening, it's impossible to understand what he's saying. He says, can you argue with the Gadol Hadar, or whom you think is the Gadol Hadar, or your Rosh Yeshiva, or an Atmua? Now, first of all, who ever heard words like that? What do you mean, can you argue? Who's the Gadol Hadar Psak? Every last question, go to the Mishnah. How does Shas begin? Memekor Karin at Hashma Shamar Avit. Right away there's a machlokes. Who's the Gadol Hadar? All of Shas you have machlokes. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, Abaye, Rava. All of Shas you have machlokes. You go to the Rishonim. Ribbono Shel Olam, when we learn, well, what do? Don't we uncover machlokot? Don't we try to understand why there's a machloket? Psak halacha, I don't have to tell you, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Magen Avraham, the Taz, the Shach, it never ends. This is part of the halachic process. You go into the responsa literature and tell me, we follow every psak of the Nota B'Yehuda? Gadol Mirabin Shemor, Rabbi Cheskel Landau. I don't have to tell you who the Noda B'Yehuda was. And tell me, we eat swordfish? We eat sturgeon? He was Posek Lekula. No, there was such machloket. We follow every psak of the Chatam Sofer? Tell me, how many of you are going to be Rabbanim where you're going to be Mesadik Edushin in a shul? Are you allowed to be Masada Kedushin in a shul? It's not a simple matter. Not a simple she'ilah. Many of the Chatam Sofer fathers asked it 100% for David Lifshitz wouldn't be Masada Kedushin in a shul. I don't think the Rav would be Masada Kedushin in a shul. But nowadays, when they built the great synagogue, they built it al Tanai, that just as they should have the right to eat and drink in the great synagogue, they should have the right Masada Kedushin, if need be, in the great synagogue. So, I mean, when you take the halacha, the questions that come up, we always find machloket. We always find Rabbanim arguing. And this concept of the Gadol Hadar, call it Das Teira, you see, is alien to the halachic rhythm. You literally have a conflict here that is modern. We never heard these words before. We never heard these words uttered before 1970. And suddenly, how do you argue? Now, you notice what he says here. His words are very measured, and he's reflecting it with modernity. First of all, the Hasidic Rebbe. Chassidic Rebbe, Chassidus is a relatively modern invention. When did Chassidus begin? When did it take hold? When did it take root? 230 years ago, 220 years ago, 200 years ago. And as time moves on, a Chassidic Rebbe, you have already a Chassid, his Rebbe, Das Teira. Now, I know a lot of people, when I spoke about this in a different context with Das Teira, my lectures in the Monday class a number of years ago, so a lot of Hasidim wrote into me that claimed that with a Rebbe, he's a father figure. Of course there's truth to that, but in Lubavitch, there's no question the Rebbe was a father figure. Nevertheless, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that dinosaurs didn't exist, everyone took it halach l'maisa. Dinosaurs don't exist until today. You'll find Lubavitchers who will give you all types of answers proving that these skeletons we find in the ground, these dinosaurs we put together, the Museum of Natural History, this is not real. This did not really happen. And I look at it from afar. Don't confuse what I'm saying with my own feelings. To me, to make an argument whether dinosaurs exist or not exist, to drive people away from Yiddishkeit over this topic, as my own grandchildren were taken out of a school because the Rebbe said to them, dinosaurs, the Chassidish guy, Lubavitcher, the Rebbe had said there was no such thing as dinosaurs. Lo hayu v'lo nivru. And with overnight, my children, my son-in-law took the kids out of such a school. But to make an issue, so right, there were dinosaurs, Baruch Hashem, there's a Tiferet Yisrael, you don't have to go to Natan Slifkin, you don't have to go to Rabbi Slifkin, you can go back 150 years ago to Tiferet Yisrael, how he blesses the Ribbono Shel Olam when they find the dinosaurs, the fossils, the skeletons. He quotes the Medrash, Borei Olamot VaHechvivan, and it's a proof to everything that Chazal say that it's correct. But you see, when you have a Hasidic Rebbe already, everything becomes Rebbe-centered, and as time moves on, it's not the Hasidus like Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was a Lubavitcher Hasid. Rav Menachem Kasher was a Gera Hasid. But they retain their own thinking. Today a chassid, I remember riding on the bus coming from the Kotel on a Tisha B'Av many, many years ago, must be 44 years ago, I would say. And I was sitting next to a chassid, and we started up a conversation. And there was an election coming up, and I said to the chassid, and we were talking about who to vote for, and the chassid tells me, an intelligent man, a businessman, a well-to-do man, a gerer chassid, he says, no, ich hab nicht a problem. I don't have a problem who to vote for. Whatever the Rebbe will tell me, I will do. And I sat there with my Litvisha mind. I looked at this man with pity. This is thinking. This is Yiddishkeit. This is intellect. This is Selam Elokim. This is a mind. Okay. Then he moves on to Rosh Yeshiva. And you see, this is what happened in the United States. This is to a certain degree what happened in the world. At one time, a shtut rav was the king. He was the one that counted. He was the posek. He was the lamdan. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, inspector, the rav of Kafna, in his presence, and everyone stood in awe. He was Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He was the rav of Kafna. The Deva Avraham, Rabbi Avraham Kahana Shapiro, was the rav of Kafna. Yeah, of course, he was the rav of Kafna after Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. What a gong! The Devar Avraham, they say, the first volume of the Devar Avraham, that the Goynis is unequaled in the Litvisha Welt, his first volume. It was unbelievable. Oh, what minds, what Rabbanim, the Arsameach was the Rav of Divins, the Litvisha Rav, the Misnaglisha Rav of Divins. Rabbi Yosef Rosen was the Hasidish Rav of Divins. Oh, what you had here, wow, wow, wow. Gaonim, Gaonim. And in America, the East European Rabbanim, as we spoke about last year, were all over the United States. The biggest Lamdan to probably set foot in America was of Yehuda Leib Feuer, who was Rav in Holyoke. When the Rav came to America, Mori Rebbe, who was his idol? Who was his role model? Who did he look up to? Reb Lazer Silva. Mori Rebbe's original dream was to be like Reb Lazer Silva. Baruch Hashem, he wound up in the classroom, room 102 on Amsterdam Avenue. It changed the world. But he wound up there almost 10 years after he first arrived in the United States and went to Boston. So you see, Rabbanim, they were the Rabbanim, Agudas HaRabbanim, these were the Lamdanim, these were the Poskim. And then the Rosh Yeshiva, who changed America, you have to give them credit, but slowly but surely, they became the dominant personalities. So, you see, and by the way, this is across the board. The only place in the world where I believe you still have Rabbanim of stature is in the state of Israel. Here in Israel, you do have Rabbanim, Shtat Rabbanim, some of them who are Lamdanim, Mufakim, who know how to Paskin, the Gedolim and Psak. It's a little bit different here. The Rosh Yeshiva here too, I don't want to say they're not of prime importance, absolutely. But in America, there's no rab's name you can mention, a practicing rabbi who has the same following, adoration, as the Rashi Yeshiva. There were a few exceptions, maybe Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt in Memphis, the Rabbi Vat Ephraim, alright, the Rabbi Vat Ephraim, you can give one or two examples, but who heard of Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt outside of Lamdonim? The Rashi Yeshiva carry weight, they are so important. And this is what he says, you see, he's caught in a quagmire. The commandants say to these Lakewood fellas, you're a bunch of schutzim, why are you picking on me, why are you throwing dots at me, why are you throwing arrows at me? It's his world. But he says, ani malameid aleihem schut, that you don't know that much in learning yet. And then he relates black and white. This is a very important kuntris of Pesach, because Reb Menashe Klein spells it out. He relates black and white to the problem of arguing Das Teira. And here he quotes the sources in Shas, and he shows that throughout Shas, Amorayim argued, Tanaim argued. He quotes here the Gemara Gittin Daf Chavtet Amid Bet Ma Ba Rav Ashi Katab Al Aviv Rav Ashi Ha Di Abba De Katnutahu Koloma She Amra Kishaya Katan Volav Ha Lacha He. And he quotes Ma Ba Rav Ashi, where the son of Rav Ashi, who are we talking about? Rabbeinu of Rav Ashi, who put together the Gemara, who edited the Gemara, Mipeim Ano Chayim, Mimeim Ano Shotim, he writes about his own father. He said this when he was young. He was incorrect. The halacha is not like that. And he gets very, very sharp, and he says, just as Chazal could argue with each other, this is the halachic process. If you don't understand this, if you don't agree to this, if you say that a Talmud Chacham has to keep his mouth shut, you call a cholek al zeh ki cholek al hashchina. And v'rotzeh has v'sholom levatel Torat Moshe Rabbeinu olav al shalom sheyesh l'chol tamid v'tei chelik b'toratenu hakadosha v'chayav la'gid daito kefi ma sheheru lo min ha'shamayim. And these words are very important, and this is the heart of the Torah Shabbat Per experience. Why do we study? Why do we learn? Why do we aspire to be Gedolei Yisrael? Why don't I say to myself, Ani Rothkopf, you little nobody, born in the Bronx, wasted your time rooting for the Yankees. Who the heck are you? If you're going to think like that, the whole halachic rhythm / process comes to an end. What is Torah about? And this is the beauty of Torah. This is the Gemara I quoted to you from Chulin. Makom hinichlo avotav lehit gaderbo. As much as the Torah has been studied before us, studied by Gedolei Yisrael, we yet a little place is left for us to come up with the chiddush. Yiftach bedoro kishmul bedoro. We are as big as anyone. This is when we're alive, this is when we're here. And this is what the halachic process is all about. And this is why we strive. I remember my Rebbe, before I went into the Rav, I had a Rebbe for 2 years from Shmuel Leizerbok. Unfortunately, the yeshiva makes believe he never taught there. There are reasons why, because he was very frustrated at the end, very caustic, very bitter. He had been ill and he wanted to come back and teach. And when he recovered, and the yeshiva forced him to retire. And he didn't retire willingly. He went to labor court. He lost. And it's a process that a Rebbe has to keep up with his students. You have to have and understand their language. You can't be a Rebbe if you're not in the world of your Talmidim. Let me quote to you from someone not in our camp, but Solomon Schechter already said at a seminary graduation in the early 1900s, if you don't know baseball, you can't be a rabbi in America. And you all know the Rav learned baseball, to quote Rebbe, to be able to talk with his grandchildren. And it's very important to keep up with the students, to keep up with the world. And when a Rebbe loses that, particularly if the Rebbe's native language, his Torah language, the language he's comfortable in, is Yiddish, and the students only speak English, by the 1970s there was no place for Rabbi Volk in the yeshiva, unfortunately, because he was a great lamdan and he was a nice person and he had a very open mind. He was a telza, and there was a lot to him that you could admire. So one time we're sitting in class, this has to be about 55, let's say, and Reb Shmuel lays a box at the class. Are there any of you in the class that want to learn Shas, that want to learn all of Shas? Hey, the hand, raise your hand if you want to learn Shas. Two hands went up. A guy named Melvin Zalewski, goes on to become a well-known doctor, Rabbi Dr. Melvin Zalewski, I understand his son also, Rabbi Dr. Mordechai, if I'm not mistaken, Zalewski. And the other hand was a kid named Donnie Rothkopf. And I always look back at that moment. Whenever I meet Mel, we occasionally bump into, if I'm not mistaken, he lives in Teaneck, if I'm not mistaken, occasionally bump into each other. So I always remind him that we were the only two kids in the class to shoot our hands up. Why did we shoot our hands up? Because we had that desire. We didn't want to say we're American kids, we don't have good minds, we don't have a good background, we aren't steeped in Torah, we'll be from Jews, we'll follow the Hyman Goldman, the English version of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That's Rabbi Goldman's grandfather, Rabbi Shmuel Golden of Englewood. His grandfather translated the Kitzur into English maybe in the 1930s already, a Hebrew publishing company. It was really something. We grew up on his English translation of the Kitzur. Since then, there are many more translations, but we wanted to get ahead. We wanted to accomplish, and you can't feel second rate. And I look back now, I'm not, without going into detail, but I wrote about it in Washington. I once spoke when I was younger. I spoke here in Gruss. I gave a whole shiur, and Rabban Lichtenstein attended and hugged me afterwards. And how I was Matar in a Gunner, and how I went to Rabbi Obadiah Yosef, and again, what gives Rakefet the right? But this is the halachic process. And he quotes the entire tshuva of Rav Moshe to him with the covering of the hat, how Rav Moshe encouraged him to argue with him. And this is what it's about. And everyone, he says, we all have to argue, we all have to express our opinions, we all have to give details, we all have to give sources, and each one has to say what God has revealed to him. This is the way your mind works. This is your Tzelem Elokim. All right, this is very powerful, but it's not the heart of the lecture, but another point he makes, then we're going to come to the heart. Very powerful, very correct. Now, they attack in the letter from Lakewood, and unfortunately, he doesn't publish the letter from Lakewood. But you can surmise from what he's writing what the letter said to him. So according to the letter, they attack him. How dare you sponsor the Erev in Flatbush? Reb Moshe is so opposed. So he says here, first of all, he says, what do you mean? I have nothing to do with the Erev in Flatbush. He says, no one has asked me about it. I have not responded. I am not involved with the Erev. Yes, there are Rabbanim in Flatbush who built the Erev. They're the people in charge. And look what he says. I quote him word by word. V'yim heim rabbanim hareihim yodim bi'atzman ma sheheim osim. V'yim lav ein afkimina ma sheheim osim. Al kol panim, Im yesh lachem tanot aleihem, luchu aleichem, v'dibru imachem. And here it's a very important statement. A Rav, and this, by the way, is very contemporary in Israel, I'll tell you in a second. A Rav, if he's a Rav, he's reliable. He's responsible. If he knows what he's doing. If he's not on that level, he's not a rabbi. And that's plain and simple. A Rav, does he know? Doesn't he know? Why, you just got caught up in the big conflict. One of your classmates came out with a psak with the women's prayer group, and he got that original letter that just because you have smicha doesn't give you the right to paskin. And of course, while you back down, there was a tremendous outcry. The Jewish week went crazy with joy. This time it wasn't the Jewish, but the forwards, if I'm not mistaken, that attacked YU, but the Jewish week. Okay, this is a very delicate question. There's no question a young rabbi has to consult. There's no question that when you go into the rabbinate, you have to have a person you feel comfortable with. Rav Heschel Schechter is absolutely right. You have to consult with someone who knows your world. I don't agree when it comes to a question of Erev. I'm not opposed to consulting with Rav Menashe Klein or Rav Moshe Feinstein. Whether or not, I told you, you remember what I said in class. We asked Rav Moshe in the early 50s, if we're Bnei Akiva kids from the east side, are we allowed to say Halal and Yom Ha'atzmaut? And Rav Moshe answered so beautifully, Ba'ayikis Ayantif, if for you it's a holiday, you can say Hallel. No, we asked Rav Moshe. But you, it has to be someone who knows your world. That there's no question about. But a young rabbi shouldn't paskin everything. There's the big difference between paskin a question of a meat and a knife and a fork and a spoon, chalav basar, everything you're learning with Rav Bednash, a question of what you can eat in Pesach, what you can't eat. I mean, in America, it's not a problem, but in Israel, this is a tremendous problem. Legumes, legume derivatives, no legumes whatsoever. Margarine that can stuff up your heart and send you to an early grave. I mean, you have no idea the problems here. The way I already bought a bag of potato chips for Pesach, I bought it for now. And I take a look, it's already kosher of Pesach with the wrong oil. You follow me? Not the healthy canola oil, but Hashem Yirachem Olanu, the oil from the tamarim, from the dates, which is very bad for the heart. So a young rabbi can paskin that, but when you get involved with Shira Chadasha, you're getting involved with a halakha question, a social question, a political question. The ramifications are endless. There already you have to consult. So, but he says very beautifully here, what do you want out of me? Go to the rabbis, and those rabbis, mimanachach. If they know how to learn, they know what they're doing. And if they don't know how to learn, what kind of rabbis are they? Now, what did I say about the state of Israel? Those of you who follow the news in Israel, there's a tremendous problem with Geirut. Again, to go into detail would take a year of lectures. I lectured for a year on Geirut many decades ago. We have a real problem with Geirut. It's a problem all over the world. It's a problem since time immemorial. It's a problem that comes up time and again in this very kollel. I have taught students who are the great-grandchildren of women who converted to Yiddishkeit into homes that were not probably practically kosher, homes that were not Shem Shabbos. The women converted to get married, and this is the great-grandson, great-grandmother, grandmother, mother, son. Is he Jewish? Isn't he Jewish? So you'll pop at me what Rav Heschel Schechter said, that every year, Michael, do you know what Rav Schechter said? That every year we have in the YU Kollelim a number of young men who have to convert to Mitzat Chumri. You follow? Without a bracha, no big deal. So you'll say, Rebbe, what's the big shaila? Let him go to mikvah with a basin. What's the big shaila? No, it's only one problem. that if you have a case where he's a Kohen, what do you do? Could you imagine? The kid is a Kohen, his father's a Kohen, his father's Shomer Mitzvah, the kid is learning, the kid is a Lamdan, and the kid is converting the Chumrah. What kind of Kohen can he be? He's a Ger Tzedek. It's a low pashut. No, how do you measure conversion? What does Kabbalat Mitzvot mean? Alright, you know how much has been written on this topic? So, in the state of Israel today, the chief rabbinate, again, the rabbanim, who's in charge of conversion? Who makes the decision? Are you going to have a central authority? Are you going to have a central authority which is Haredi? What if the Haredim require a convert? This came out in the press. I don't know if it was a joke or not. But if the woman wears pants, her conversion is not valid. No, a woman wears pants, her conversion is not valid. To my mind, Rabbi Avadia Yosef Paskin Lahalacha, it's written in the Chubat, I lived it in life, that a woman, if she's going to wear a skirt that's not all the way down to her knee, when she's sitting, she should wear pants. Rabbi Avadia Paskin, I can tell you in the 1970s, I'm revealing secrets now. Your wife's a Stern College graduate. Let them check. Let them do the history of Stern College. In the 1970s, the rub was mata for girls to wear tzniistic pantsuits in Stern College. Women were wearing pants. Reb Moshe was mata. I believe it's published for a woman in Muncie in her backyard trimming the lawn, trimming the trees. She's allowed to wear pants. So you're going to come along and say that a woman who's not wearing pants, the conversion was not chal. But now let's go a little further. A woman converts, she doesn't cover her hair. No, she doesn't cover her hair. The conversion chal, not chal. What do you say? All your wives cover their hair. My wife covers her hair. My daughters cover their hair. Where I come from, I saw Rebbitzins of Gedolei Yisrael. And the hair was not covered. And Steve Bressler and Aaron and Ani Rothkopf give Eidut Nemana. Eidut Nemana. I can give you a long list, which I don't want to do. People are listening all over the world. Everyone says, I meet the people here in Israel. That the Rub's wife, I said, you have a shine on the Rub's wife? Go to Litta. I said, but I don't want to mention all the other names I know who came to him. In Baltimore, they used to say in a certain Rosh Yeshiva's wife, she finally started covering her hair when her hair was falling out. Quote, end quote. And I challenge any Baltimorean to deny that I just said the truth. So you see, who do you depend upon? Now they introduced the Gerit bill. Are you going to have a centralized authority? Or, according to the Elazar Stern Gerit bill, every Rav can do what he wants. If you're a Shtat Rav, you have the authority. You can convert. You can set the standards. This is a very delicate question. It affects the RCA. The chief rabbin and the last two chief rabbis were not exactly a model of, in my humble opinion, common sense and intelligence at times. So they started that they're not accepting RCA conversions. Only a few rabbis in the RCA. Well, if that's the case, you lose the authority of every individual Rav. An individual Rav, it's like Rav Menashe Klein is saying, 100%. If he knows how to learn, he knows what he's doing. And if he doesn't know how to learn, why should he be a Rav? How can he be a Rav? And I'll add, if he's a young rabbi, you do have to have a mentor to consult with. When I was Rav in Philadelphia, 61, 62, I used to consult with Rav Ephraim Yalas, okay? Michael can tell you who Rav Yalas was. Alright. That he didn't accomplish much in Philadelphia, no Rav accomplished much. It was Philadelphia. But that he knew Shas with a photographic memory and every line in Tosfos, by God, I can say that Nemana. When I went into the Rabbinate of New Jersey, then my role model, my mentor, my friend, my colleague, was Rav Teitz, Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. So I was a young rabbi. When I came in Aliyah, when Rav Aaron Lichtenstein came, I used to consult with him. All right, today I'm older. Basically, I consult with myself, with Svarim. But a lot of people turn to me, consult with me. Talmidim consult with me. I understand it. But this is a very delicate question. In brackets, mazel tov, mazel tov. In brackets, I'll entertain you for a minute. You see, Israeli politics you get your money's worth. We live in Israel, we live here with tension, Lo Aleinu, the unit of paratroopers that was attacked up north where Alon Ben Arli HaKohen was seriously injured. He should have a refuah shleima, b'mit palo for him. Alon Ben Arli HaKohen, that unit is my grandson. I have two grandsons in that same unit, one in active service, one in miluim. So, you know, life here is not easy and taxes are high, but you get your entertainment when they pass the gear spill. And I'm not that happy with the jail and the shmel. They were stupid, but this is Lapid and he's not exactly in our camp. So when they passed the bill, Shas went crazy with joy, cursing Netanyahu and Bushi Herzog is the Mashiach, right or wrong, and he's on a white donkey and he's our next prime minister and we're going to support him. The fact that he was the first one to say give away Jerusalem, that they forgot. Jerusalem means nothing to the Haredim or these type of Haredim. Israel means nothing to them. One other Haredi leader, he's going to America with 40,000 Hasidims on the Zangerson. Let them support him from Lakewood and from the five towns, Lakewood, and from Beverly Hills, and from Hancock Park. Baruch Hashem. Gagism to hate. Then, this last week, it turned out that Bushi Herzog is supporting the Gayrit Bill. Oh, what's going on in the Haredi world? It is a riot. Boy, do you get entertainment. Now, come back here. So this is a valid question. And Rabbi Menashe Klein is absolutely correct. Rabbanim are Rabbanim. And if they know how to learn, they have a right to paskin. If they don't know how to learn, we hope they're sincere. We hope they're honest. That they're working on learning how to learn. They're working on becoming Talmidei Chachamim. And they consult. But here you come to the heart of today's lecture. The heart of today's Shiur. And this is something we all know. Tell me, what does the world say when you ask a question of one rabbi? Are you allowed to ask a second rabbi? Isn't this something we're all taught? Once you ask a question, that's it. You can't go and bother a second rabbi. Now, this is a very interesting sugya in Masechet Nida, Daf Chaf Amid Bet, and it comes up a number of times in Shas. Famous story in Masechet Nida, Yalta, the wife of Rav Nachman, and she went and she asked a shaila with Dam Nida, and the first rub she asked, the first amora she asked, said that the Dam is Tameyah. The second time she asked, she was told it's Tahar. And here you have an open act by a great woman, by a famous woman, that she went to two different rabbis. How can this be? Look into Tosfot, Nida, Daf Chaf Amid Bet. And you'll see Tosfot, Divrei HaMatzkil, Igmarei Samach. Look into what Tosfot asks. Look into what he answers. And essentially, when you take this sugya and you develop it, there's nothing wrong with asking a question more than once. But Herbie, when you come to the second rabbi, you have to tell him what you asked the first rabbi and what the first rabbi said. And Tosfot here gives an answer with brilliant insight. Gentlemen, the more you ask, the more rabbis involved, the more they will be careful The mitoch kach yidak the kuba dava upamim shnarishun toer viatsa hadava la ora. When something becomes public, you have a check and balance system. Look what happens to Aaron Rakefet in this very classroom. Before we had the internet, I'm teaching. I make mistakes. My students are not learned enough to correct me. You have the internet? People are listening across the world. Tomorrow I'll begin the class with 3 or 4, I admit, minor corrections, nothing major. But I am so happy to correct myself because nobody knows everything. The Rav would tell stories. He made mistakes. He's repeating what he heard from his father, his grandfather, family traditions. There were minor details that later when I went into the world of Jewish history and particularly Matan Torah history, Litvisha Torah history, wow. You go on the website, people are listening all over the world. People are sending in corrections. This is fabulous. Not only that, when you paskin a shaila, so someone will say to you, I'm paskin, this is for you only, you're not supposed to tell anyone. All right. That's not the way halacha works. I'm not saying you can't, certain times maybe you have to do it. The Rav said that in Boston in his early years, whenever he got a shaila of dam nida, what we just spoke about, so he always tried to be mekil. Because he felt that for Americans, Balei Tshuva, who is makpid on mikveh, tarat mishpacha, you want to be mekil, if you can. No, I think today we don't have that same pressure. We can be more balanced when labriyot, when we give an answer. But when you publish, Rav Moshe Feinstein publishes, people can argue with him. People can disagree with him. Labriyot, the Manali Geret. No one ever criticized Rav Schwartz for differing with Rav Moshe. The psukim of Rav Moshe, which really we have not accepted. I can give you one example in a second. I'll give you a simple example. But our criticism of the Manali Geret is the language. The language has to be with Derech Eretz. Rav Moshe, I'll give you an example where Rav Moshe published and he's not accepted. Rav Moshe held that is the whole question of Yom Tov Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. And this is a very fascinating question, which is very real. You have a place like Mir Yeshiva, where you have thousands of foreign students, Mir and Brisk, learning. Torah Shraga, kids are here for Yom Tov, the Kolel. So Rav Moshe held that if you're living in Israel, and your parents are supporting you from New York, from Chutz Laretz, you still have to observe 2 days. And there was a famous case of in Matastofi, I believe he was a Rosh Hashiva afterwards in Itri, I don't know where he is today, but a famous case where a guy never left Israel, he came on Aliyah, he studied here in the Haredi world, and Koila left the Koila, left the Koila, but his support came from his parents in America. Rav Moshe Paskin, 2 days. No, if Rav Moshe is going to tell this individual quietly, no one will know. But Rav Moshe published. And you can miken zich dingin with him. You can argue. You can critique Rav Moshe. Truth will win out. People will decide what to do. It goes back and forth. This is the halachic process that, and tell me, everyone knows everything? Even the greatest gadol can overlook a psak of the Rambam, can overlook a Tosfot, Didn't I tell you the story with Reb Aaron Cutler with his son-in-law? I have to correct myself tomorrow. I dated it too late. It didn't happen when I learned in Lakewood. I don't know. When he visited Shul 53. When I learned in Lakewood already, Reb Aaron, or 54, Reb Aaron already had Reb Dov Schwartzman for someone. So it happened on an earlier visit to Israel. But of course, that was the fact. You know the story or not? Reb Aaron is in the middle of giving you shiur, and Reb Aaron is all heated up, and he's in Chevron, and he sees this Talmud sitting with his feet on the desk. No, I don't see anyone in Griscolo sitting with their feet on the desk. And Reb Aaron thunders at him, "Das heißt Kavod, Kavod HaTorah, this is Kavod HaTorah," and these young man thunders back at Reb Aaron, "If the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, they can't learn, if the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva knew how to learn, I would give kavod. But since he doesn't know how to learn," and he throws a Rambam at Reb Aaron. And Reb Aaron's, the shiur was shattered. It's the same story with Reb Chaim Brisker in the original shiur, when they wanted to appoint him a Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, the trustees of the yeshiva. We heard this from the Reb many, many times. So I wrote it up, Reb Heschel wrote it up. The trustees of the yeshiva were worried Reb Chaim, his method is so revolutionary, maybe he doesn't know how to learn. So they wanted to hear the shiur. And they came to hear the trial shiur was in Yavam, but the Rav said, he knew, I believe in the Rav, I give you the shiur, what it was on, which Gemara, because the Rav said he knew the Gemara. And in the middle of the shiur, someone shot something at Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim didn't have an answer, I think it was a Rambam. And Reb Chaim himself remembered that there's a contradiction, and he sat down, and he couldn't continue the shiur. And the Balabatim was so impressed with his intellectual honesty, they hired him on the spot to become a Volozhin of Rosh Yeshiva. But you see, no one knows it all. You can forget, you can overlook. This way, when you go public, everyone can weigh and measure, and you can find a guy like Chaim Eiselman, who has big bekiyot. You can find someone like Mordechai Yosef Gluckman, who has Bekiyot. There's a fellow who is in the Kollel. He went to Mira a year and a half ago. Tall fellow. He knew Shas. He had Bekiyot, the photographic memory. I didn't have one. I needed a Gemara. I used to say to him, "I'm looking for this Gemara. What daf is it on?" He shoot back at me, gave me the daf. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein has that type of mind. But even you can be Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, you can be Reb Aaron Cutler, you can be anyone, but you can overlook something. And that's what he says, that when you ask and you re-ask, as long as you say you've asked before and you give what other people have said and you tell the second Rav, It is not only allowed, it is to be encouraged. It is fabulous in helping the halachic process. And he says, "V'keinu min ha'nachon." Ask, the more you ask, the more people get involved, the more you weigh it, the more the halachic rhythm continues to move on. And I'm going to reach.
Did this become a pick and choose issue?
Oh, so he says. That's exactly. So, and he says, and what happens when we finally reach a psak? He says that sometimes you see a majority trend developing, or you can choose in accordance with rabbinic guidance. What's the rabbinic guidance? Suffolk d'oraita l'chumra, but a suffolk d'rabbanan may very well be l'kula. Pick and choose, that's part of halachic life. Do you use gelatin? Don't you use gelatin?
Well, we got a Rabbi
Levi
Mahadi, we don't have to worry about this.
Well, say that, you go to the shuk.
Let them figure it out.
The world doesn't know in the shuk. All those candies, I see them giving out in shul, I checked it out. It has gelatin in it. Kosher gelatin, but it's gelatin. The more expensive candies have fish gelatin. So I myself don't, I only eat the fish gelatin. But I don't tell anyone nothing about the candy because, you know, there are plenty of gedolim who are matir. But pick and choose is part of the halakha. Tell me, you ride up in an automatic elevator, you go down in an automatic elevator? Big machloike, to ride up, it's a lot easier to be mekhil. To ride down already, you regenerate electricity, alright, it's a shiloh. Don't misunderstand me, I ride down, particularly now with a problem of walking, I certainly ride down. But of course there's pick and choose. Now what about kashrut? The heksha you buy? Go into Osharad, I don't know Rami Leibel Mahadran, I go into Osharad, you see all the different hashgachas lined up. I don't know what the difference is, but I see the OU, and I see Rabbi Rubin, and I see the Badats. I buy the meat, there's very little meat, but my grandchildren love it, it's Hacker's corned beef. Hacker's corned beef. Ah, boy. Oh boy. So, I gotta tell you, I don't check what heksha, but I'm sure, you know, it must be, I know it's fine. I remember when I came in Aliyah, Hacker's was a shame dover already 45 years ago. But you're absolutely right. There's pick and choose. But Reb Menashe Klein is so powerful here. And he says,
one quick thing. The whole issue with 2 days of Yom Kippur coming
right.
from America.
Right.
I mean, basically, that's become an issue of picking and choosing. I mean, there are people who will not ask their Rav because they know the answer he's going to give. So then they won't ask them.
Let me put it this way. I think it's well known on the streets that there are three different opinions. So you don't have to ask a Rav. You can pick and choose. People do what their friends do. To a certain degree, it's become a political issue. It's gotten involved with social and political context. In other words, I notice that the people who wear kippat sugat, they observe one day or a second day, a day and a half, the chumrah, but it's basically one day. And I notice the people who are more charedi, they observe 2 days. It's become a political issue. The truth of the matter is, and I think this is one issue that one area of Shas and Paiskim that I know quite well. I don't let me not praise my knowledge. Yalaluch zorim velo picha, but I know the area well, and I can tell you. It's very hot. If you observe 2 days in Eretz Yisrael and on the second day you daven like you're in New York, boy, are you being mekhil. You have no idea what a pulla that is, because it's a different world today.
Rav Gori used to laugh at those people.
You can go back to Rav Kook. Rav Kook refused that there was they wanted to make a seder for tzedakah, Yontif Sheni, and it was the Chutz Laaretz people, wealthy people from Poland. This is in the early 30s, late 20s. And they asked Rav Kook, and Rav Kook wouldn't let them finally, but they said, Rebbe, these are people that can give, in today's terms, millions of dollars for tzedakah. So he was matir for them to do it, as long as a band will be playing. You follow? That they have to know there's no Kedushat Yontif second day in Eretz Yisrael. But you're right, but Rav Menashe Klein gives two fabulous examples here. He says, don't we see with the most difficult halachic questions, aren't these questions totally thrown out into the public realm? No Rav will paskin alone. And the examples are, of course, Aguna and Mamzerut. When you have a case of a classic Aguna, I'm not talking about the Aguna that reached the New York Times Friday, I believe it was, which is a terrible, shocking, shocking story. I tell you, I shake, I cry. The Chilul Hashem. You know what I'm talking about, right? There's a woman on the coast. I met part of the family when I was on the coast. Nice family. The grandfather was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim.
Which coast?
West Coast.
West Coast.
Yeah, when a New Yorker says the coast, he means the West Coast. So this was her second marriage, and something went wrong. I don't know details, but they separated over 11 years ago, I believe it is. And they got a civil divorce, they made a settlement, there was one child, everything arranged, and then he gave a get al tnai with a based in from money, I don't know where, it's a phone, a based in, everyone criticizes this based in, for money you get honey, guts are love hitting, And the get al tnai, that the get is only valid if she gives him $500,000. And now he got a heta from this Beistin, Meir Rabbanim, and he remarried last week. Could you imagine? Remarried. So she can't budge. She doesn't have a get. Even if she takes this get, she doesn't have the, or not going to give him. And let's say even if she has the 500,000, she's not going to give it to him. The get is not chal. It's a get al tnai. And he has a civil divorce. She has a civil divorce. She can't marry without a get. And he overcame the Chayim Rabbeinu Geshem, got a chet, the Meir Rabbanim. And there's a picture in the New York Times of the Chatan Vakala walking after the chuppah, and with a whole article, what a chilul Hashem. But that's not the Aguna I'm talking about. Which one is what?
Which business?
I don't know. Look at the article.
It's in Los Angeles?
No, I think, I don't know where it's from. I don't want to say what I don't know. I didn't read the article being yet. I saw it in the New York Times. I printed it out, then it was sent to me, but I haven't had a minute free. I haven't read it being, so I don't want to say anything that's incorrect. But what Menashe Klein is talking about, a classic Akona. For the sake of argument, the Twin Towers. No? I know people who were in that building, married people. I had many students who were killed, that I'm not even talking about. But imagine one man, he was married, his brother is married to my student. So I know the story intimately. He was on the 102nd floor. Okay? He called his wife to say goodbye and thank her for being a good wife. He knew he'll never make it. Body was never found. Can she remarry? Do you have tens and tens, if not hundreds, of Jewish men? The Titanic had a kosher kitchen. They're selling off what survives from the Titanic. I don't know why people, what's the big deal, throwing a chair from the Titanic? I don't know. Okay. It's part of life. I guess when you have a lot of money, you have to do something with it so you can show off to people, I have a chair from the Titanic. Okay. The Titanic, there were many Jewish women, husbands. We remember the men gave up their places in the lifeboats to the women.
Nathan Strauss. Isidore wouldn't go without Isidore. They would drown. Nathan was saved because he lived and went to stay in Europe. He refused this. Isidore said he wasn't going to stay in Europe. Once they came back here. That's why Nathan Strauss is the name of the street. They came back and they were drowned.
So how?
That's why Netanya is named after him.
Baruch Hashem. But you see, Reb Menashe Klein is absolutely right. A shaila like this goes into the public thoroughfare. All the Rabbanim have to deal with it. And you reach the halachic rhythm, reaches a conclusion. By the way, the Twin Towers was very easy lahatir, because you didn't need a body. In other words, what is aguna? There's no body. But there, where the man called his wife to say goodbye, so you know right away he was in the Twin Towers, and you know what happened, and the rove of the people on the 102nd floor, the absolute majority, were killed. Then you have the second majority. I can't go into detail now, but the second majority, had he survived, he would have called his wife within a reasonable period of time. Now, there you have to know that the husband and wife get along. The Mishnah in Yevamot, Shalom Lash, Shalom Lo. But if he called his wife to say goodbye, it shows you how they knew how to get along. I also believe he called the rabbi to tell the rabbi, be sure my wife is not left in Aguna. So it was easy, Lahatia. Who was the final posek with the Titanic, who was Matia, was Rab Meskin, Rab Yaakov HaKohen Meskin, the Rav who redeemed me as a Bukhar. he was the one who was matia. Okay? You know his grandchildren, great grandchildren, yes, etc. Baruch Hashem. Now Mamzerut. See, Mamzerut too is a horrendous problem. What if a kid comes to you? You're going to go into the rabbinate, you're going to deal with Balei Tshuva. A kid comes to you, my mother was married twice, I'm from the second marriage. She never got a get in between, alright? You got a real shaila there. What if a kid comes to you, I come from the Ukraine, I come from Russia, I come from Lithuania, I became a Baal Tshuva, my mother was married three times to Jews, I'm from the third marriage, she never got a get in between.
The first two marriages were reformed marriages.
Not reformed, they were civil marriages, but Haisha nicknamed Bekesev, Bishtar, Bebiya, there were sexual relations, more than 30 days, there was Hazaka. These are tremendous problems. And Rab Manasseh HaKatan is absolutely right. We throw them into the public thoroughfare. And by throwing them into the public thoroughfare, the Rabbanim debate, the Rabbanim yell, the Rabbanim shout, the Rabbanim publish tshuva, and ultimately a consensus develops. And this is the halachic process. So I have to tell you, this part of the tshuva goes way beyond a ruvin. And a rav should never be ashamed or hesitant to state his opinion. But if he's a proper rav, if he's a proper Talmud Chacham, go public. Publish, explain, give your sources. Let people look at it and let people evaluate. And by the way, this was the entire idea behind the rabbinic journals. In modern times, you have Tel Talpiyot, which was in Hungary, I believe yet in the 1800s into the 1900s. You have Hapades in the United States. You have Hamar in the United States. You have in Israel, Moria. You have one rabbinic journal after another. And what happens in these rabbinic journals? It's people who are not yet ready to publish a sefer, but they have tshuva, they have ideas, they deal with difficult questions, and it sharpens the mind. And this is the halachic process. And chas v'chalila, you should say to Rav Menashe Klein, keep your mouth shut, don't open your mouth, don't think, don't produce, don't innovate. Rav Moshe Feinstein spoke, this Rosh Yeshiva spoke, this Hasidic Rebbe spoke, nobody else counts. Rav Menashe Klein here is absolutely right. Now, when it comes to an individual, I want to caution you, again, if you ask a shaila, if there's someone you turn to, this is your Rav, you shouldn't go further. That's your Rav, you follow his psakim, you have confidence in him, he knows what he's doing. Like Rav Menashe Klein said, he knows what he's doing, he's a Rav. I'm not telling you to go and broadcast in public, but there are shailas already that go way beyond the individual. And I don't have to go any further. Imagine this case we have before our eyes, where the guy gave a conditional get. What's the condition? She has to give him $500,000. Could you imagine? Now, evidently, the money is there. But even if the money is there, so what? Who says you're obligated to pay a man off to get a get? And to go in the wake of all eyes, Jew and non-Jew, the wife is left in a guna, you fife on her, and you remarry. And I gotta tell you something else. Look at the female species that you can find a woman willing to step into a marriage with a man who would act like this. But you see, this is part of life. He probably gave her a whole sob story, what the woman did to me. This is what novels are made out of. And this woman had been married before. It was her second marriage. Her first marriage, 4 children. The second marriage, 1 child. And this was her second marriage. And he laughs at the world. It's beyond words. And even if you're right and she's wrong, but there's a Chilul Hashem here. End it. Basically, it's very important to teach, and this is a fault line in our chinuch. What is our chinuch? Truth, Torah, God, dignity of the human being. But we should add to it at times, a person has to compromise.
The
of course, we're talking from people. Absolutely from. Look, if the person has it to you or me, $500,000 is big money. But if you have, I don't know who she is. She's a business lady. And it's unbelievable. But it's unbelievable. But it's very important in Chinuch to teach the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Fafa Medved, the Psayin Amid Aleph, compromise. I've said this so many times. In my own life, I've always tried to be an example. I remember a student of mine was a member of my family, and they were having a fight over money. I wrote out a check to my student. I said, here's the money, don't fight. I mean, he wouldn't cash the check, but he said, Rebbe, you taught me an important lesson. I said, I taught you an important lesson. I taught you the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's very important, because what does Musa teach you? Bishvilin ivra ha'olam. I'm the center, I'm the focus, I can be great. I am a little less than an angel. If those of you that have learned in Slabodka have to understand what I'm saying, very important. Person has to know how to compromise. And this is part of life, halacha, kiddush Hashem. We have to, at times we can be absolutely right. You can be in right field, but ultimately you're in left field. You're left behind. You have to know how to compromise. Okay, but
the rabbi who remarried him was also a former rabbi?
Of course, if a Beis Din with each one had a bigger beard than your beard can be matir, you're asking me. I agree with you 1,000,000%. And even if he's right, and even if she wronged him and she aggravated him, whatever his complaints, I have no idea. But Chilul Hashem like this. 11 years? I don't know. I'm an old-fashioned guy. The Gemara says, Makin otad shomer rotzani. My grandson came to me Saturday night or Friday. My grandson was in the house Friday and Motzei Shabbos. It's Friday. So Thursday night, Baruch Hashem. So this grandson, who always bothers me with delicate questions. So evidently people were talking about this. So he said, Saba, what can we do? I said, Nizriel Baruch Hashem, the problem is 99% solved. And I told him, you know, the Israeli, but they did him, the law of the land. I said, your mother played a role in these laws. She testified in the Knesset. She's in a first Kohenet. In Israel, when the Beit Din rules, Chovalet Teit Get, and you say, go fly a kite. The Beit Din has any seichel? And now more and more, but they didn't do as they Israelitize, become part of the Israeli scene, understand the mentality. They say to the man, you've lost all privileges till you give a get. No passport, no visa, no check writing, no license if you needed to be a doctor, a lawyer, etc. So then you have Mishigayim who don't care. They hate their wife so. Throw the guy into jail. Then you have guys, this came up a number of years ago, there were two people in jail, one I think for homicide, and one for armed robbery. And we're in Kippot, everyone is from, they can kill and they were there, they don't kill in Shabbos.
I
understand?
Told you about
Budwitz is Wilman. There are more names, there was a guy from Cleveland, the famous gangster, would never kill on Shabbos. He's a Baruch Hashem. So a guy's in jail, Moshe, you listening? A guy's in jail, and he says, I don't give a damn, you can't do anything to me, I'm a visa, a passport I can't use, I'm in jail anyway. Do you know what the law changed? My daughter testified, the Knesset passed the law that in addition to the jailers, and only jailers of a certain rank had the right to throw a prisoner into solitary confinement, the Rabbanim can throw a prisoner into solitary confinement. Both guys gave a get. One within 24 hours and one within 48 hours to get out of solitary. So my grandson was so proud. I said, that we can do in Israel. But in Chutz Laretz, we don't have that power. and the problem remains. Okay, let me go one step further. I see we don't have a minion tonight, so be the last week we could have gotten, because next week already the clock has changed. Can you get a few guys? That would be a chesed. That would be a chesed. Thank you, Michael. Be a chesed for the elder people here. But I see the Wayu Chag HaSmicha. Rabbi Bednash was right. I was knocked out. But I told him I couldn't call off the Wayu Chag HaSmicha is going on upstairs. They're watching on some interconnection with the satellite or who knows what.
Is it today in America?
It's now 12 o'clock, 12 noon it began. Baruch Hashem, thank God, YU has a chag. I am proud and happy. I will celebrate it. B'lin ned, I'll make a l'chaim tonight. And say, l'kavod the young rabbis, many of them my own students. Now, something very interesting happens here. He sends the letter to Lakewood. And I don't know what happened. The letter came back to maybe it was misaddressed, maybe they have enough postage on it. The letter came back. So he begins the second letter, which begins on page 54 in the Kuntres. He says, Simana Miltahu. He said, it's a rabbinic expression. A simon is something you should take. If something happens, take it to heart. And he says, I sent you the letter. And it came back to me, and it tells me that I have to add to the letter. I have to go out of my way to write to you, to encourage you, and to explain myself to you. And now, we'll just do the first part of the letter. He goes very strong. It's like, he's empowered. And he says, yes, people are criticizing me. And they say, I was the Rav HaMachshir of the Flatbush Erev, and I was the Rav HaMachshir of the Borough Park Erev. And I'll put it this way, he admits the truth. He says, I have nothing to do with Flatbush. I live in Borough Park. And he says, I wasn't consulted, but let me be truthful with you. I understand why you're criticizing me. These Eruvin are only being built because of my psakim. Because I took on Reb Moshe Feinstein. And he says, you have no right to criticize me. What you don't understand is I am doing nothing new. I am doing nothing revolutionary. I am going out of my way to return the crown of Torah to its pristine place. And here he says, what do you mean an Arab? Every Jewish community had an Arab. It was unheard of that there shouldn't be an Arab. And he speaks about the Gera Rebbe, the Chiddushei Harim, the first Gera Rebbe. And he gives you a source that when they built the Erev in Warsaw, he was overjoyed. And he gives a source where they quote the Gera Rebbe. He quotes the Chatam Sofer. We'll come back to the Chatam Sofer. And he quotes the Chatam Sofer that if you don't believe in building an Erev, you're simply an apikoros, plain and simple. And he says, that which you are worried about problems arising, This is not a halachic attitude. What are you worried about? The Erev will break down? No. In Warsaw, the Erev could break down too.
Cold weather,
yeah. Well, yeah, I should hope so. What are you worried about? And here he quotes Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. And that's what I told you. Reb Tzvi Pesach's original responsum is very important to the whole concept of Erev in the United States. Because if you recall what Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank said basically is, I don't live in America. I'm not going to travel to America. I can't get involved with a question that involves seeing with your own eyes how to do and how to construct. But Reb Tzvi Pesach says, one thing I can tell you, that if you're worried about side issues, that if they build an Erev, people will carry what they're not supposed to carry. People will carry if one time the Erev falls down. You will be worried about all these side issues. This is not the halachic way of thinking. Ein gozrin gezeirot bizman hazeh. And here, Rav Menashe Klein is very powerful. What are you worried about? What are you coming up with? What new thoughts are you developing? What new concepts? What new fears? Who gave you the right to think like this? And he goes, Ring is there, Bisman Hassan, he calls that Tzvi Pesach Frank. And I told you, this is basic to halachic thinking. You can have all the Gezerot in mind. You take Pesach coming, we mentioned before, the Eder Charedit doesn't want to use canola oil. Why? If you use canola oil, you use soy oil. You use soy oil, you use vegetable oil. My dear students, this is not halachic thinking. There is no way canola oil can be considered kidneyot, because canola oil, the use of canola, did not exist at the time that people stopped eating kidneyot. Simple halakhic thinking.
Plus it's made from things that are not edible.
Well, you can build it up even more. We don't eat the canola, whatever. What would you call it? The canola peanut? The canola nut?
It's not canola. You know what canola is?
No, what is it?
Canadian oil.
What is Canadian?
The word oil come? It's as poisonous. Not poisonous, but it's a weed, basically.
A weed.
But canola is not what it's from.
I see.
Canola
I see.
Stands for Canadian oil.
Wow, you taught me something. I thought canola was a certain type of nut that could not be eaten but could be turned into oil. So you can't come up with the gezeira out of your own logic. And he calls it Tzvi Pesach Frank. You have absolutely no right to criticize me. All right, let me reiterate. You're going to see it's a major gemara that we'll start up with next week. And he's fighting back, fighting heavily. We're going to reach next week how he is matir 10 different ideas to put together to be matir in Erev. But he admits, yes, I can't keep my name out of it. I may not be directly involved in Flatbush. Perhaps I'm more involved in Borough Park. But everything is a result of what I have written, the Tshuvat, and this is what I said before, with all due respects to the Satna Basin, to its Makshir, the Borough Park Erev, but nothing would have gotten off the floor if not for Rav Menashe Katan and his ability to publish and to disseminate and to answer and to let the rhythm of Halacha overwhelm the world. Well, we got to give him credit. You can agree or disagree, but you got to give him credit. So, what did we see today? The students from Lakewood. I don't know who this Gelb is. I don't know what became of him. But you can see that Rav Menashe Klein certainly has regards for him, respect for him, and is willing to answer him, even though he must be a lot younger and not the Lamdan that Rav Menashe Klein was at that time. And In the first letter, he reproduces the whole story of Reb Simcha Elberg. He sends them a copy of that letter. He goes into the whole question of Gadol Hadar, of Das Teira, of Rosh Yeshiva, of Hasidic Rebbe. He deals with Flatbush, he deals with Borough Park. In the second letter, which we just began, which comes about as a result of the first letter being returned to him, not deliverable, we don't know what the mistake was, if it didn't have enough postage, didn't have the right address, etc. He evidently corrected it because the second letter got through. He goes in and takes credit for Borough Park Flatbush, his learning, his tshuvat, he acknowledges, quotes Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. But above all, we went into a whole discussion. When you ask a shaila, can you repeat it? Can you ask again? Who do you ask? Who do you turn to? How do you paskin? And ein hachinami, if you don't go public, you're never going to be a posek. And if you go public, you're going to be critiqued. And you're going to have to defend yourself. And at times, the world will follow you. And at times, it will move elsewhere. Adkan. Now, tomorrow is another day, another world, fascinating class tomorrow. You'll see what I'll show you. This, please give to Yitzchak. Where is Yitzchak today?
He's speaking somewhere.
Okay, please give him that.
He's doing some sort of a presentation.
Is anyone here from Tel Aviv who's interested in the yearbook of the big shul in North Tel Aviv? Ichud Shivat Zion. Very interesting shul. Yosef Mordechai Gachman. This is for him. That's for him. Yosef Mordechai sent me this. Look at this cartoon. The Tiskash is a Raktach Boset. The soldier's son is dressed like a Haredi, and the Haredi son is dressed like a soldier. Now notice the parents are hesitant and they're saying, Zuchaze Raktach Boset. Look how happy the children are. And boy, that's our goal, to merge that soldier with the Haredi, and they should lose no ability. The Haredi should remain a Haredi, and the soldier should remain a good soldier. By the way, Nachal Haredi played a big role in the shootout on Shabbos, was it Friday night, when they went to arrest those murderers. And then Nachal Haredi played a big role. Anyone who wants it, you're welcome. This is Rabbi Krasansky's blog on the draft.
Yeah, I read that.
Very powerful. And there's a TV, on Facebook, Rabbi Milstein's on Facebook or on some website, not on Facebook, it's a recording of Rabbi Milstein's talk in the Old City. Very, very powerful. But Aaron Kefet has one word. No one mentions the fact that it is a chovah to serve in the IDF. Deal with the Rambam, deal with the Gemara.
I heard a guy say that the uniform is Big Day Kahuna.
Big Day Kahuna. Reb Chaim Drukman compared the weapons of the Israeli army to Tashmishei Kedusha. Okay? Now, this is, anyone from Russia, I guess, give this to Yosef Mordechai. This is a Fabrengin at the Purim at the Rebbe in 1987 with Reb Mordechai, the Sheikhet from Moscow, who I knew, who had gotten out. And he's at the Purim Fabrengin, and how the Rebbe's makarif him and happy to see him. And this is the Rebbe, second to none, when he was much younger and had time. This is from 5735. No, it's later already. Where someone writes to the Rebbe, they don't tell you who, professor, they block out the name, from Philadelphia. He writes to the Rebbe, boy, I was asked this on the Israeli radio in a debate with a Reform and conservative rabbi years ago. How can you believe in a religion that tells you to wipe out Amalek, to kill every man, woman, and child? And the Rebbe answers him, Kol HaKavod. So this is quite a document. Gentlemen, I can tell you, it is overwhelming to me what the internet has. You just got to know what to look for and what not to look for. But wow, unbelievable. Until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9:15 a.m. in Health and Happiness, Das Vedanya. Where are the boys?